Things in Proverbs are, well, like in most wisdom literature, are very simple. There's no religious or social or political criticism like in the Prophets. There are none of those slightly obscure Jewish laws that we find earlier in the Old Testament. And there's none of the closely argued Pauline letters. There's none of that. Things are much simpler than that, which is probably just as well on a bank holiday August weekend. For in Proverbs, you've basically got two options, as we've been hearing this month. You're either wise or you're foolish. It's as simple and as devastating as that. Now, the wise ones, as we've heard, are the people who are playing the cosmic game according to God's rules, and therefore they are succeeding in the world's terms, and they've got lots of friends, and they've got stacks of renown. Proverbs loves renown. And they've got a constant stream of very large suppers. That's the wise. Now the fool, on the other hand, is different. He's not playing the game according to God's rules. And what's much more worrying, he doesn't care that he's not playing the game according to God's rules. And therefore, he finds himself in Proverbs friendless, renownless, probably drunk, certainly hungry, and destined to perish. It's not much of a life being a fool. So, as I say, things couldn't really be simpler this evening. You're either wise or you're foolish. And so far this August, we've concentrated, as you'll probably know, on four fools. And in fact, there's another one on the way tonight. Quite why all the characters deemed appropriate for All Souls' Ears are fools of the first order, I've no idea. But there we are. Now, I don't know about you, but I love Proverbs. I do love Proverbs. I find it constantly fresh. And one of the reasons why I enjoy Proverbs is its angle of approach. It's unique. Because Proverbs, unlike most books in the Bible, I don't know if you've noticed this, but it approaches theology not from the sort of dogma of divine revelation, but from common human experience. Which means, of course, that it will ring lots of bells for you. Because unless you are an extraterrestrial, and I mean everyone's welcome, but unless you are an extraterrestrial, you will have had quite a few common human experiences. And you see, that's just where Proverbs is coming from. You share a homeland. It's sort of sanctified common sense. Which makes it, if you will excuse the picture, very much the Arthur Daly of the Old Testament. It's very much the middleman. Because just as Arthur lives out his life in a precarious balance between the law and street life, so in fact does Proverbs. It's the middleman between the law and the prophets on the one hand, and street ethics on the other. So that's the world we'll be inhabiting tonight. It's the twilight zone. It's not the New Testament, it's the Old Testament. And it's not your average Old Testament, but it's Proverbs. Trilby and cigar in hand, it's the Wheeler Dealer. It's very secular in its approach sometimes, but it's as frequently very, very sharp. And so it is tonight as we focus on chapter 30, verse 15, the first half. The leech has two daughters. Give, give, they cry. And that's it. That's our text this evening. And I'd say that you could put your Bibles down now, but I'd probably lose my job. But we are, in fact, going to be circling around those very few words. I actually prefer the Good News version, which Harry actually read from. The leech has two daughters, and both are named Give Me. But we all understand the meaning, don't we? We all understand the meaning, and we see immediately why our given theme this evening is the bloodsucker. The bloodsucker. Are you one? I hope not, because tonight, unfortunately, and it's not my choice, but there we are, unfortunately, we are talking thankless. Tonight, we're talking unsatisfied. We're talking restless. We're talking grasping. We're talking insatiable. We're talking demanding. Which, to abbreviate, spells turgid. Thankless, unsatisfied, restless, grasping, insatiable, and demanding. Turgid. Turgid the bloodsucker. Could be a film. But it doesn't describe you, of course. Of course it doesn't. We all know that. Don't worry. There was an old lady. Actually, she wasn't old. She wasn't old. I just say old lady because they always are old in these stories, don't they? But she wasn't old. There was a lady who went up to a vicar after a service and she said, "Lovely sermon, vicar. Nearly everything you said applied to someone I know." And this is definitely one of those sermons. It's not about you. But you've already noted, haven't you, how well it describes the person sitting next to you. The leech has two daughters, though they might just as well be sons. And they cry, "Give, give." And that rings bells with me, because the most common accusation that I hear from the elderly about the younger generation today, and you've probably heard it, and perhaps you've even said it. It's something like this, isn't it? "They don't know how lucky they are. They don't know how lucky they are." I mean, we never had all that. I didn't see a banana till I was 53. Yet I was happy. It's just give, give, give. Television in their bedrooms. Disgusting, I call it. We were lucky to have a bed in our bedrooms. And there's truth here, of course, isn't there? There's truth here. But let's not jump on the wrong bandwagon. It's not surely that individuals or the world are more sinful now. It's just that very often we have more opportunity to exercise it. It's not that more individuals are more greedy now. It's just that there are more opportunities to be greedy. I mean, in former times, it was only the odd, rather sickly and depressed soul who wandered about telling people to be unhappy with what they had. It was only the odd, rather depressed and sickly soul who wandered about in tights telling people not to be content with what they had. Well, of course, nowadays, that odd, rather depressed and sickly soul has grown up. He's now a multi-billion-dollar industry. He's called advertising. So what hope, I ask you, for a young turgid like me? What hope for an old turgid? It's an unfair contest. But having said that, turgid has to face three unpleasant facts. There is a cost to being thankless and a demanding old so-and-so. And the cost, familiar to any card-carrying fool in Proverbs, is threefold. Firstly, turgid will be unattractive company. Will he be unattractive company? There's just no give in turgid. No give at all. He's not that aware of other human beings as human beings. Somebody once described a woman they knew called Edith. They described her like this. Edith was a little country bounded on the north, south, East and West by Edith. And that would describe Turgid well. Terminally self-obsessed. And also, if it's possible to be such a thing, profoundly shallow. Turgid will be at one of the party discussing the new personal computer, discussing the new car phone, discussing the new timeshare. Anything new, in fact, except a new hymn. And his epitaph, Turgid died at 30 and was buried at 70. Turgid will be unattractive company. Secondly, Turgid actually won't enjoy life very much. Which is odd, really, because he's so determined to. But the trouble is that Turgid hasn't spotted the distinction between wealth and possessions. Because wealth is a lovely word, isn't it? Wealth is a lovely word. Literally, it means that which is good for people. That which is good for people, for their well-being and prosperity. Wealth looks outwards. Wealth is exciting because it creates options for people. Options for you, and of course, much more importantly, options for other people. But you see, Turgid, in all his restless demands, will have little wealth. He'll just have possessions. And possessions, of course, unlike wealth, look inward. Wealth, that which is good for people, for their well-being and for their prosperity. That's interesting. Possessions, on the other hand, are about as interesting as a headache at a rock concert. And that's all Turgid has. So it's no place to be on the treadmill of acquisition. As the old saying goes, if all the rich men in the world divided their money between themselves, there wouldn't be enough to go round. It took me about 3 weeks to work it out. But you, of course, and I can just see you trying to catch my eye to tell me, you, of course, are not on that treadmill, are you? We've established that. Not for you, the material dissatisfaction with your lot in life. Not for you, the grasping after every damn penny and perk. Not for you, that claptrap about having earned it, as if there aren't a million other people who would quite happily do the job that you do. Not for you, the whining about grants and expenses. You're not on that treadmill. It's no temptation for you. But the trouble is, we're not all as strong as you. And some of us are finding it hard. Turgid will be unattractive company. Turgid won't enjoy life. And finally, God won't enjoy Turgid. Hear the Ten Commandments. For remember, we're in the world of Proverbs this evening. You shall not covet your neighbor's house, or his wife, or his pay packet, or his au pair, or his reputation, or even his now legendary ox. You shall not covet. And why? Because it's lethal. Coveting is not a cream bun. It's a rattlesnake. You shall not covet. Because, very simply, it's idolatry. And it just so happens to be one of our God's peculiar quirks that he doesn't like sharing his throne.
I had a dream once, set in Regent's Park. And behold, as we do in dreams, behold, I saw a young, upwardly mobile turgid floating along. Because of course, when you're upwardly mobile, it's hard to keep your feet on the ground. And then he sees Jesus, and he's delighted, because he's not only upwardly mobile, he's also completely and utterly born again. And so he says to Jesus, "I'm so excited, Master," he says. "The future's really falling into place for Janet and I. Just can't wait for next year. We really can't. Janet's new job, my promotion. Oh, and we've finally decided on the new kitchen units we want. Yes, that'll be when we move, of course. Yes, we're looking forward to that as well. Well, we'd both like another baby next year, preferably August or September. So we'll need more space for him, or her. Though, of course, we're hoping for a boy, of course. And you won't believe this, Master, but we've just heard that Janet's uncle, he's invited us to stay with him in the States next Christmas. Well, not next Christmas, but the Christmas after. So we're planning for that as well. Yeah, things are really opening up. Great. But enough of me, Master. Tell me, what were you doing when we met?" And in my dream, I heard Jesus say, "Me? I was enjoying this little flower." "The flower," says Turgid, who is still mentally 18 months hence and 3,000 miles away in the States. "The flower, yes." "Ah," says Turgid, the total loss for words. "Pretty, isn't it?" "Yes," says Jesus. "Yes, it is. And tomorrow, you see, tomorrow it'll be gone." The leech has two daughters. "Give, give," they cry. Turgid, the fifth and final proverbial fool, avoided by friends, disappointed by life, and wept over by God. Now, I don't know about you, but doesn't all this airless and unsatisfied talk make you crave a little gratitude? Doesn't it make you want to scream out for a bit of unrestrained thankfulness? I almost disintegrated on the spot the other week when I was listening to a former gambler speak. I often quote from former gamblers, but that's because I learn a lot from them. And this former gambler, he said this: "There is a cost to my past life. There is a cost to my past life. When, for instance, I leave here tonight, I won't be going home to my wife and three children. I'll be going to my flat alone. But given the state I was in, I'm fortunate enough to have that. So in many ways," he said, "I'm the luckiest man in the world." Turgid the bloodsucker. Thank God there's an alternative. Amen.